welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the Golden Age of Radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this hour, adventure. Later on, we hear Brian Dunleavy, film actor, star in Dangerous Assignment. But right now, it's a capable radio cast starring in Escape and Cornell Woolrich's story, Papa Benjamin, with William Conrad, Harry Bartell, Joan Banks, and Frank Lovejoy, from January 21st, 1948, on CBS.
Groping down a dark alleyway in the French Quarter of New Orleans, driven by terror, hounded by the curse of the Papaloi, a curse from which there is no escape.
Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and carefully contrived to free you from the four walls of today. For a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape into two worlds. One of modern jazz, the other of primitive voodoo. And to a doomed man who brought them together, as William Irish imagined it in his eerie story, Papa Benjamin.
Sergeant Tolliver speaking. Yeah? Yeah? Well, pick him up on a drunk 723. Right. Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
Are you in charge here?
Yeah. Hey, aren't you Eddie Block, the band leader?
That's right.
Hey, Joe, look who's here, Eddie Block.
Well, never thought we'd get a visit from a big celebrity like you, Mr. Block. And it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I suppose, though, this is just the shank of the evening for a big shot orchestra leader.
Well, what can we do for you, Mr. Block?
I've just killed a man.
You're kidding.
I tell you, I've just killed a man.
I guess you've been working too hard, Mr. Block. You're imagining things.
Here's the gun. Look at it.
Now, sit down, Mr. Block. Better have a drink of water. You'll feel better.
No. I'm all right.
Sarge?
Yeah?
This gun's been used all right. Smell.
Was it an accident, Mr. Block?
No.
Well, who'd you use it on? Who was it?
I don't know his name. They call him Papa Benjamin.
Sounds like
a white man?
No, he was a Negro.
Oh, well, now, in New Orleans...
No. It was nothing like that.
Well, what was he doing to you?
He was killing me.
Huh?
Killing you? But how?
Look at me. I used to weigh 200 pounds. I'm down to 102.
Well, how? How was he killing you?
Would you believe in anything you can't see, can't hear, can't touch?
Well...
I've been to the biggest doctors in the world. They don't believe me. How can I expect you to? I simply say I'm cracked and let it go at that. I don't want to spend the rest of my life in an asylum.
Now, look, Mr. Block. You say he was a Negro named Papa Bench.
Yeah, he was an old man. 80, maybe 90. Skin and bones, he could hardly walk. And I shot him.
You sure? You sure you killed him?
Yeah, of course.
Well, where?
I don't know exactly. In a little back alley in the Vieux Carré. Near Congo Square.
Supposing you take us there. Can you do that? Then maybe we'll find out this is just a bad dream.
Alley. To the right, between the buildings.
All right, let's go. You pack, Sarge?
You catch cold without it.
Mm-hmm. Don't go back there, honey.
Quiet, you.
Oh, cop.
Nice neighborhood.
This is it. In that door and up the stairs.
Well, come on.
Oh, no. Don't make me go up there again, please.
Better come, Mr. Block. You're showing us.
Hey, flash a light. There's somebody here on the stairs.
He won't bother us. Dead drunk. Step over him and let's go. This ain't the most pleasant neighborhood to come calling in.
This it?
Yeah. In that door.
Come on.
Better call the commissioner. Mr. Block wasn't kidding. This man's dead.
But why? Why? Because he was killing me, Commissioner.
It was self-defense.
He never came near me once. I was the one who went to him. I offered him $3,000, $10,000, any amount, and he refused. Finally, I offered him my gun and asked him to shoot me with it, to get it over with quickly and not to drag it out any longer.
And when he said no, you shot him.
Yeah. So you can lock me up now.
Mr. Block, do you think we want to hang a murder rap on you, one of the most popular celebrities in the United States? Use your head. Now, I'm trying to find an out for you.
He was killing me.
Look, an 80-year-old colored man who's so feeble he can't even go upstairs by himself, who has to have his food pulled up to him in a basket, is killing who? A stumble bum his own age? No. Mr. Eddie Block, the top band leader of America, who can name his own price anyway, who has about everything a man can want. Tell me just one thing, Mr. Block. How was he killing you?
By thinking thought waves of death that reached me through the air.
Now, Mr. Block...
You want to hush the whole thing up, don't you?
No. No, Mr. Block. But I'm going to get the whole story. So you might as well start telling me from the beginning.
All right. Began one night about 2 years ago. We were playing at Maxim's on Charles Street. We were just another band. Small Dixieland outfit then. Eddie Block and his chicks. Judy Jarvis, my wife, did the vocals. But we weren't setting the world on fire. Business was so bad, I knew what to expect when I got a call from the manager one night after closing time.
Come in. Oh, hi, Eddie. I thought we'd better have a little talk.
It's that bad, huh?
We took in $4,500 this week.
Yeah, I see. And you can cancel my contract anytime it falls under $5,000. I get it.
Eddie, they can get the same liquor and sandwiches anywhere, but they'll go where the band has something. Tonight, there were more waiters in the place than customers. Judy didn't even get a hand.
It's not her fault.
I know it's not her fault. She's okay, but... Well, I'm asking you, what's wrong?
I don't know. I'm getting the latest arrangement sent to me from New York. We sweat our heads bald rehearsing.
This is New Orleans, practically the cradle of jazz. You gotta give them something new.
Yeah, I know. When do I leave?
Well, finish the week up. See if you can do something about it by Monday. If not, I'll have to wear St. Louis to get Kruger's band. I'm sorry, Eddie.
Oh, that's okay. You're not running a charity bazaar. But I didn't feel so cocky about it. It looked like we were on the skid. The band just didn't seem to have it. And I wasn't good enough to figure out why and pull him out of it. I was feeling pretty low when I went back to the deserted bandstand to pick up some music. The place was dark and empty, except for a couple of scrub women cleaning up. A dark nightclub can be an eerie place sometimes. I got that feeling just before I saw it. Saw it lying on the floor between the stands, with a severed chicken claw with a red ribbon tied around it. I almost laughed. How did that thing get there? Then I picked it up and tossed it out of the floor where the scrub women were cleaning up. I certainly wasn't expecting the reaction I got. They took one look, turned, and ran out. I just recovered from that surprise and was bending down to pick up some music that had slipped to the floor when I heard someone come in. I guess I was pretty well hidden from view. Anyway, he didn't see me. It was Johnny Statz, my drummer. And he was acting funny. Looking intently at the floor, searching for something. Suddenly, he spotted this chicken claw on the floor and grabbed it up with a terrific sigh of relief, stuffed it into his pocket, and walked out. What I did then, I did on a strange impulse, and it changed the whole course of my life. I followed Johnny Statz. I suppose I just meant to catch up with him and have a cup of coffee with him somewhere and ask about the chicken claw. But as I followed him farther and farther down into the Vieux Carré, down to Congo Square, it was a growing curiosity that kept me on his trail. When he turned into that dark alleyway, I stopped and debated. I felt like an eavesdropper, and yet something drew me on. And I walked up that dark alley. I passed that one lighted window.
Don't go no further, honey.
But I went on. Through a sort of tunnel into another alleyway. And then I stopped. Ahead of me, Johnny Statz stood before a dark, dismal-looking old wreck of a building. Suddenly, he whistled, quietly. A gigantic man appeared out of the shadows. Johnny handed him the chicken claw and was motioned into the building. And then I heard sounds coming from the upstairs of that building. A throbbing drum, a wailing, an unearthly sound, and yet wonderful. An exotic, fascinating rhythm. This was music. Something new, something sensational, something that would set New Orleans on its ear and put Eddie Block in the big time. I had to get in there and hear it. I was mighty busy for the next 5 minutes. I ran back down the alley, overturning 5 or 6 garbage cans before I found what I needed. Then back to that lighted window in the alley and a 5-spot in exchange for a red ribbon. Then I was back at the dark building, walking up to that menacing shadow.
Light up. Let me see your face.
Okay. Easy with that knife. My ribs are tender.
Your face never been here before.
My friend Johnny Statz up there. He'll tell you.
Mr. Johnny, your friend? Yes, you'd come?
This chicken claw told me to come.
Papa Benjamin sent you there?
Certainly. You'll make me late. Papa Benjamin won't like that.
All right, go along here. First thing you know, all New Orleans is going to be coming around.
I groped up the stairs, half expecting to feel his knife in my back. But I got to the top safely. Cautiously, I opened the door and such a state of frenzy, I wasn't even noticed. I slipped into a corner and slid down by the wall, sitting on the floor. That was a sight I'll never forget. Wild, fantastic, hideous, revolting, fascinating. In the center of the room was an incredibly old man, naked to the waist, wearing a hideous mask, and holding a live chicken. There were wild gestures, weird incantations, frantic dancing, shouting, rolling of eyes. There was blood. And always there was a chant. Nobody noticed me. After a moment, I took a piece of copy paper out of my pocket and began putting down the notes. It was wonderful. Fantastic and wonderful. In 10 minutes, I had it. And I'd seen enough for a lifetime of nightmares. I began to feel sick. I wanted to get out. I started to stand up. Suddenly, the room was dead.
A stranger is here.
Bony arm stretched out straight from the shoulder, pointing at me like an arrow. And there was blood on it.
What you do here?
I know this man. Let me find out.
No one moved. There was no sound in the room as Johnny Statz came over and squatted beside me.
You're in terrible trouble, Eddie. I don't know if I can get you out of it.
What is this, Statz? What are you doing here?
There's no time to talk now. You've got to do something quick or you'll be a dead man.
Why? I'm in the very heart of New Orleans. They wouldn't dare.
Listen, you've seen enough tonight. You know better. Eddie, there's only one way.
What?
Join, become one of us.
Oh,
it's the only way, Eddie. I can't save you. You'd better hurry up, because unless you do, you'll never get out of here alive. This is voodoo.
Okay, sure, I'll join up. Why not?
Wait a minute, Eddie. There's a lot more to it than you think. Unless you're serious, it'd be better to get cut to pieces right now.
All right, don't worry. I'm serious.
All right. Papaloy, his spirit wishes to join our spirits.
The old man burned some feathers while the others watched silently. Then he nodded.
Came out all right. He reads them. The spirits are willing.
There were other things. Rituals, ceremonies, another sacrifice. Then as the chanting started again, they brought me the sacrificial bowl. I didn't have to be told what was in it. I started to draw back.
Drink, Eddie. Drink or they'll kill you on the spot.
Late next morning, the band assembled at Maxim's for a rehearsal. When Johnny Statz got there, he found another drummer sitting in his place. Naturally, he came to me.
What's all this about, Eddie?
I don't want any voodoo lover in my band. That's all, Statz. Here's a check for 2 weeks' salary.
So you're crossing him, are you? Boy, I wouldn't want to be in your shoes for all the gold in Fort Knox.
If you mean that bad dream last night, I haven't told anybody and I won't. I'd be laughed at. I'm only remembering what I can use of it. The jungle is just trees to me, the Congo a river, and the nighttime is just a time for electric lights.
Hey, but this new number you're going to rehearse this morning.
I said I'd remember what I can use.
Listen, Eddie, that chant is sacred. It's secret.
It was secret.
Eddie, don't do it.
Look, here's a couple of C notes. Hand them these. That ought to pay up my dues from now to doomsday, and I don't want a receipt. And if they try putting poison in my orange juice, they'll end up in a chain gang.
It's not that easy, Eddie. You're one of us.
Oh, get out.
Okay. Goodbye, dead man.
Graham, the manager of the club, changed his mind about canceling our contract when he heard us rehearse the chant. Instead, he spent 5 G's in publicity. And Saturday night was set for the big unveiling. It seemed like all New Orleans tried to jam into Maxim's, came to hear the voodoo chant, the real thing. Just before we were ready to hit it, Judy came up to me.
Eddie, listen. Let's not do it.
Oh, what do you mean, baby, not do it? This is it. This is our ticket to the big time. It'll be a sensation.
Yeah, I know, but I got a funny feeling. And look, I found this under your dressing room door just now. It sounds like a warning. Somebody doesn't want you to play that number.
Let me sing. You can summon the spirits, but can you dismiss them again? Think well. Forget it, baby. Statz is trying to scare me because I fired him.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, come on, honey, let's go. They're waiting.
Maxim takes great pleasure in bringing you a historic moment in musical history. You're about to hear for the first time anywhere the voodoo chant, the age-old ceremonial rhythm no one but the initiated has ever heard before. This is the real thing. An accurate transcription, not a note's been changed. So, ladies and gentlemen, Eddie Block and his chips present for the first time anywhere the voodoo chant.
After it was over, I went back to our dressing room. Judy got there before me. She was reading a newspaper somebody had brought in.
Eddie, listen.
Oh, baby, you were wonderful, and we wowed them. We're in the money now.
Yeah, Eddie, but...
Oh, boy, am I tired. I feel more tired than I've ever felt in my life. Nervous strain, I guess, huh? Let down?
Eddie, look here in the paper.
Oh, who cares about the paper now?
Eddie, it's Johnny Statz.
Huh?
He's dead. He drowned himself in Lake Pontchartrain this afternoon.
He...
this afternoon. Then that note, it wasn't Johnny.
Oh, well, look, Eddie, you can't blame yourself.
Me? Oh, no. No, of course not, but I think I know who to blame.
What do you mean?
Nothing.
Eddie, why don't you lie down and rest for a few minutes? You look worn out.
I am. I feel dead.
Here, let me take off your coat.
Oh, be careful.
What's the matter?
I don't know. Funny thing, while I was waving the baton on the chant, I felt something, a sharp pain there in my back, like a pin or something stuck in me.
I don't feel anything there now. Maybe it slipped down.
I don't know.
Couldn't have been much. There. Now, you just lie down. You'll feel better in a few minutes. You've been working too hard. You should relax now. Maybe take a few days off. Hey, Eddie, look here. Where did this come from?
Come on.
It's a little doll. It was lying on the dressing table. Why, Eddie, it looks just like you.
Let me see.
That's funny. Look, there in the back. There's a little pin sticking in the back.
Yes. That's right where I felt the pain. That started it. The next day, I had a backache. Later, there was a numbness that spread to my shoulders, arms, legs. I felt tired all the time, listless, dead. I began to lose weight. I couldn't get Johnny's stats out of my mind. He'd introduced me to them, vouched for me, and he'd committed suicide. He knew. He hadn't waited. I decided to get out of New Orleans. I went to New York, playing the chant, of course. I had to. It was my biggest asset now. But nothing changed. I was losing weight from a husky 200 down to 160. I couldn't sleep. Maybe if I put an ocean between. I took an offer in London, toured the continent, away a year. I was an international hit now, the biggest attraction in music. But I was down to 110, dying on my feet. The doctors couldn't figure it out. Reynolds in London told me.
You're as normal, Mr. Block, as anyone I ever examined. You're so well balanced that you haven't even got that extra little touch of imagination most actors and musicians have.
I guess that's true, Doctor. I'm just mediocre. And yet, you might say, my success is killing me. And so, after 2 years, I finally realized there was no use. I came back. Back to New Orleans. And back to the dark alleyway down near Congo Square. I could just barely drag myself along. But I had to see Papa Benjamin. I slowly climbed the stairs up to that loathsome door. I went in. There he was. Papa Benjamin. Staring at me from the bed as if he'd been expecting me. Then he started to laugh. Take that curse off me. Give me my life. I'll do anything, anything you say.
What been done cannot be undone. You think spirits of earth, air, fire, water know what forgiveness means?
Intercede for me, then. You brought it about. Here's money. I'll give you twice as much. All I earn. All I ever hope to earn.
You have fouled the Obeah. Death has been on you from that night. All over world, in the air above, you have mocked spirit with a chant that summons him.
And please, please, here's a gun. Kill me now and be done with it. I can't stand anymore. All you have to do is shoot. I'll write a note, sign it, that I did it myself.
Death will come, but different. Slow. Oh, slow.
Oh, no. I can't stand it. I won't. Maybe if I kill you. Maybe then the spell will be broken.
No.
Yeah, that's...
No.
I'll kill you.
No.
And that's all, Commissioner. And I came here. To the police station. You know the rest. Well?
All right, Mr. Block.
Don't believe me, do you?
Yes, I believe you. Not about the curse, of course. That was your own mind. They planted the suggestion in your mind, you did the rest. But it's plain that you killed in self-defense. Crazy kind of self-defense, but I think we can manage it. We'll try.
Commissioner managed it all right. How is almost a story in itself. How a detective with a moulage false face posed as Papa Benjamin and called the Voodoo Clan together and into a trap. How they collected the evidence that proved my story. And how they sent most of that Voodoo bunch to jail. My name wasn't even connected with the case. So now I'm free. I'm living again. I've gained weight. The tiredness and the numbness is gone. I took a nice vacation. I went to Bermuda, relaxed, and had fun. Now I'm back in New Orleans at Maxim's, and the whole thing is forgotten. We're opening tonight, and the place is packed. Everybody's come to hear the chant. Eddie Block and the chant. We're on our way now. Nothing can stop us.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we welcome back on his triumphal return, Eddie Block and his chips, playing for you the one and only Voodoo Chant.
Look at them, Judy. They're eating it up, aren't they?
Yeah.
What's the matter?
I was hoping I'd never hear this thing again.
What do you mean? It's your trademark, yours and Eddie's.
I tried to persuade him not to do it, and he wouldn't listen.
Why? You aren't imagining all that voodoo stuff.
I don't know. It was all in his mind, and it nearly killed him. I don't think you can put it out of your mind and forget so easy. When Eddie plays it again...
Oh, nonsense.
Hey, wait a minute. Look at Eddie. There's something wrong.
What? Why, he's staggering. Judy, now wait. Here, let me pick him up. He's probably just fainted from the
excitement. No, leave him alone. He's dead. I guess Papa Benjamin won after all.
Produced and directed by William N. Robeson. And tonight brought you Papa Benjamin by William Irish. Adapted for radio by John Dunkel, with Frank Lovejoy as Eddie Block, Louis Van Ruten as Papa Benjamin, Harry Bartell as the police commissioner, and Joan Banks as Judy. Music was conceived and conducted by Cy Feuer. Next week...
You were speeding through the night on the Eastern Bull Express. You're alone and unarmed. And suddenly you realize that your life is in danger. That somewhere on the train are deadly killers from whom you must escape.
Next week, we escape with Harold Lamb's exciting adventure story, Three Good Witnesses. Good night, then, until the same time next week, when again we offer you Escape. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday from January 21st, 1948 on CBS. That story, written by Cornell Woolrich under the pen name William Irish, was one of two he submitted for Escape. The next would be in March of 1949, called Finger of Doom. He was actually a prolific writer, having many of his stories adapted on the silver screen and also on radio, mainly on suspense. And he was a recluse as well, having few dedications in his novels, even one story he dedicated to his Remington portable typewriter. It's an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and now on to Dangerous Assignment with Brian Dunleavy as star, a year after he appeared as Steve Mitchell in the TV series of the same name, from April 29, 1953 on NBC.
Dangerous Assignment, transcribed, starring Brian Dunleavy as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though, trouble. But when I walk into the commissioner's office, I don't realize that this assignment's going to find me doing my level best to get blown up. Morning, Commissioner. You sent for me?
Steve, as you know, our government has recently joined with Australia and New Zealand in a program of restoring and reconditioning certain strategic naval and air installations in the Pacific. Mainly anti-submarine bases.
Sure, what about it?
Lately, we've run into nothing but trouble down there on one of the islands. It slowed our construction schedule to a walk.
Sabotage?
Yes, last night a freighter was blown up at the docks in Rabaul, New Guinea. The ship was loaded with supplies and equipment to be delivered to the Australian project on Manus Island, as well as to our islands farther north.
Oh?
A dock worker is suspected of having caused the blast. He was spotted sneaking away from the ship a few moments before the explosion occurred. The Australians have one of their agents on the job, Dawes Malcolm. Check with him when you get to Rabaul. The two of you will work together. It's vitally important to all concerned we put an end to this sabotage and get our construction program back on schedule. Well, that's it, Steve. You got your assignment. Good luck.
Sure, I've got my assignment. Get down to Rabaul in New Guinea and pick up the trail of a dock worker suspected of blowing up a freighter. He's our one and only lead to nail those responsible for sabotaging our program of rebuilding strategic bases in the South Pacific. It's noon Thursday when my plane lands at Rabaul, and Australian Special Agent Dawes Malcolm is there to meet me. Before I can catch my breath, he whisks me into another plane.
I'm sorry for the rush act, Steve. This concerns our dock friend, Carwi, the Malay who wrecked the freighter. I learned he'd hopped aboard a ship yesterday afternoon, a small copra trader headed north.
Do you know exactly where she's headed?
Yes, here, I have a map. I'll show you. He's bound for this island here called Lito San, the fourth island in the chain.
Yeah, got a good head start on it.
Oh, he's already arrived in Lito San, I'm certain of that. I know the ship he was on. She's fast.
How big an island is Lito San?
Quite a large trading center. There's a village, shops, several big plantations. Chap could hide out for weeks.
You don't seem concerned.
I'm not. We'll have a line on Carwi 5 minutes after we land.
Such confidence. Hey, you own a Ouija board?
No, but I have a friend in Lito San who possesses the soul of a ferret. I've already contacted said friend and instructed to make inquiries. As good as owning a Ouija board, though, don't you think?
Sometimes better. It's early afternoon when our plane settles down on the island of Lito San. The place is not exactly a beehive of activity. A hot sun is beating down on the village and the streets are deserted. We hurry over to the trading post where we find Malcolm's rather large friend seated on a veranda. Large friend is comfortably settled in a wicker rocker, swatting flies with one hand and holding a tall, cool drink in the other.
Last of the heat. So help me, Hannah. I'm going to pack up and get me out of here one of these days.
You've been saying that for 20 years, Bella. You never go.
Oh, now you watch. One of these days, sweet pea. One of these days.
Quite. Steve Mitchell, Bella Draskin.
Hello.
Blasted flies. Oh, sit down, Steve. Fix him a drink, sweet pea.
How about it, Steve?
Yeah, I could use one.
You play pinochle, Steve?
Sure.
Hallelujah. You hear that, sweet pea?
I heard.
I'll send one of the boys to fetch the skipper of the Celibus Queen, and we'll...
Down, fella, down, down. We've got other things to do first. Here's your drink, Steve.
Pinochle players are hard to find on this blasted island. That Malay galoot you're after ain't gonna run away. We'll have time for a game if these blasted flies...
Where is he, fella?
Oh, out at the old Henderson place. Used to work for Jim.
Well, I thought that plantation was closed down.
Well, might well be, the way that Smith is running it. Joseph Smith, he calls himself.
New around here, isn't he?
No, moved in about 6 months ago. Don't know a thing about running the place, if you ask me. Only thing he knows how to raise is a thirst, and that's often. Already he's got the place up for sale.
And you say that Malay Cowie is out there now?
Yeah. Smith hired him. Glad to get him, too. Not many of the natives will work for him.
I'll run out there alone and sort of browse around. You said the plantation was for sale, Bella.
Yeah, but only a gent with a hole in his head would be interested.
Oh, I've got a hole in my head. Malcolm, what sort of description do you have of the Malay?
Oh, he's a small man, approximately 5'2", slight build, wiry type. Usually wears dungarees and blue shirt, wool cap. A 3-inch scar along the right jaw.
Okay.
Bella?
Fly must be equipped with radar.
Now, how about giving Steve your car?
Oh, you're welcome to the old rattle trap, honey.
Thanks, Bella.
Here, you'll need this to start it.
Huh? A hairpin?
Lost the ignition key 10 years ago.
This'll start the car, huh?
After you stomp a few times on the floorboard. Yeah.
Minutes later, I'm wheeling Bela's two-tone Essex along the docks. I follow directions and turn into the jungle, head south. I whip along at the incredible speed of 10 miles an hour for the next mile or so, and then the jungle gets thicker, the road narrower, the bouncing bouncier. I round a bend and spot three people walking along the road ahead.
Hello there.
Hi. Is the old Henderson plantation far from here?
You are on the plantation now. I'm the owner, Joseph Smith.
Oh, my name's Mitchell. I heard your place was up for sale.
Oh, yes it is, Mr. Mitchell. As a matter of fact, I'm showing these people the place now. Mr. Devaney, Mr. Schuster.
A pleasure indeed, Herr Mitchell.
How do you do, Mr. Mitchell?
Mr. Devaney, Mr. Schuster.
Tell me, Herr Mitchell, you are an agent?
What?
A real estate agent? You wish to buy for yourself or is it for someone else?
Oh, no. For myself.
I see. The reason I asked, my fiancé and I have been looking for a suitable buy the past month with very little success. I thought perhaps if you were an agent, you might know of...
No, I'm sorry. Afraid I can't help you there.
Mr. Mitchell, I shall not be long. If you will drive on to the house and wait there.
Okay.
Coming, Elena?
But, darling, if you don't mind, I'm tired. I think I will go back to the house. If Mr. Mitchell will be kind enough to offer me a lift.
Sure.
Very well. Come along, Mr. Smith.
This way down the path. The plant is only 100 yards or so.
Hop aboard, Miss Devaney.
Thank you. Oh, this is wonderful, Mr. Mitchell. I could not have walked another step.
Well, keep your fingers crossed. I still have to start up this monster. First, a twist of the hairpin. Then a one, a two, a three, and away we go.
Oh, quite an automobile this, Mr. Mitchell. You?
I borrowed it in the village. Not much to look at, I'm afraid.
Oh, it is better than walking.
What do you think of the place?
I prefer to live in the city. Manila, Saigon, Singapore. Fine food, clothes, dinner parties, oasis.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Oh, really?
I like to move around, see the world.
Have you seen much of it, Mr. Mitchell?
Quite a little.
A wonderful life to travel with the right companion.
It looks like a forward pass, but I let the ball drop for the present. We finally pull up to the main house and continue our conversation in the shade of the wide veranda. We're interrupted a quarter of an hour later by the arrival of a native worker jabbering excitedly. He keeps pointing toward the jungle, so I follow less than 100 yards from the house. He points to something in the brush. It's the body of a man. A man wearing a blue shirt, dungarees, and a very dead expression on his face. Yeah, it's Cowie, the Malay dock worker we've been looking for.
Bobby will continue his dangerous assignment in just a moment. Everyone dreams of a rosy future when they'll finally be able to retire and really enjoy life. Vacationing in different lands, enjoying the scenery of our own country, or just basking in the sunshine of their own backyard. Well, the dream can become a reality. through United States savings bonds. And you don't have to be a rich man to afford United States savings bonds. Yes, you can buy a savings bond with a modest $18.75, or you can buy a savings bond for $7,500. But no matter what savings bond you buy, you'll get back $4 for every $3 you put in. Now back to Dangerous Assignment and Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell.
So I finally locate the Malay dock worker, Kawi, who sabotaged the freighter in New Guinea, but it's too late. Somebody's closed his mouth for keeps on Joseph Smith's plantation on the island of Lita Sand, so I'm no closer to finding out who's trying to sabotage the construction of our defense bases in the area. Smith and Schuster return to the plantation house along about then. I fill them in on what's happened.
Mitchell, I think you're trying to make something out of nothing.
A murder is nothing, Schuster?
I know these natives. Probably a matter of revenge. They settle these things by a knife sometimes. Perhaps a woman was involved.
I see. Elena, did you ever see the dead man before?
Of course not.
Smith, you and Schuster were together showing him the plantation.
Well, of course. That is most of the time.
Most of the time.
Herr Smith left me for a few minutes, said he wished to inspect the water line.
Which I did, then returned to Schuster directly. See here, Mitchell, what's the meaning of all these questions of yours?
Nothing, Smith, nothing. I guess I'm just the nosy type. Rudy Schuster and Elena shut off for the village. I give them a few minutes lead while Smith gives me a sales talk on the plantation. I finally tell him I'm not interested and drive back to Bayless' place in town. Malcolm's waiting for me.
That's bad, Steve. That's our one lead on the person behind all this sabotage.
I know, Malcolm, but I've got a hunch if we find Cowie's killer, we've got our boy.
Well, this Schuster fellow, I've seen him around quite a little for the last month. He's got a boat and he's spread it around. He's looking for a plantation to buy.
That's right, Baylor. Malcolm, I'd be interested in finding out all we can about both men.
Smith and Schuster? Right, we can contact Rabaul over the Port Authority radio.
Good. Where's the Port Authority office?
It's just down the street, near the waterfront.
Let's go. See you later, Baylor.
All right, you fellas, hurry up and get this over with. Maybe we can have the game of
pinochle. Right you are, sweet pea.
How long have you known her, Malcolm?
Baylor? Oh, several years.
She always been on the up and up?
As far as I know. Why?
Just wondering. She knew where Collie was hiding out. She knew I was going to talk to him. When I get there, he'd just been killed.
I see what you mean, old boy.
Just a thought. We send a message to Rabaul asking for information on Rudy Schuster and Joseph Smith. Malcolm sticks around the office to wait for an answer. I wander along the waterfront.
Steve!
I turn around. Elena is waving to me from the deck of one of the boats tied up at the wharf.
From the board.
Okay, Elena. Hey. Nice boat you've got here.
It's Rudy's.
He around?
No, he's in town. I'm so glad to see you, Steve. I'm still shaken over that murder. Here, let me pour you a drink.
Pitcher of ice water?
Martini.
Oh, you are shaken.
Well, let's talk of pleasanter things. Here, here's your drink.
Thanks.
To us, perhaps?
Why not? That's a nice perfume you're wearing.
Toujours moi.
Hmm?
Always me.
That's a thought.
I'm leaving tonight, Steve. Always it seems I leave at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Unless maybe you don't want me to leave.
What about Rudy?
Rudy bores me. All he wants to do is poke around from one little island to another.
Looking at plantations, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You said you were shoving off tonight. Are you going on to some more islands around here?
Yes. Steve, if you don't want me to go...
Quite a coincidence, Elena.
What is?
The reason I came down here to the waterfront was to hire a skipper to take me around to some of the islands so I could look at some plantations.
Steve, why don't you come with us?
Think it'd be all right with Rudy?
Ah, we'll see that it is. Please, Steve, you come with us.
Huh? Okay, Elena. Sounds like a good idea. I'm glad you thought of it. Yeah, right now the deal's working just the way I wanted. If Schuster's involved, I want to stay close to him, and it looks like my best chance of doing that is Elena. I go back to the hotel, pick up my gear, and head for the Port Authority office. Malcolm's waiting for me outside.
We got a reply from my boss, Steve.
Let's have it.
They gave the plantation owner, Joseph Smith, a clean bill of health.
How about Schuster?
Not so clean. He's a former Nazi naval officer who was attached to the Imperial Japanese Navy during the war.
Well.
2 months ago in Saigon, he was acquitted of murder on insufficient evidence.
Whose murder?
A former Japanese submarine officer.
Very interesting.
Yes, but how does it tie in?
Well, we're investigating sabotage of anti-submarine bases. Schuster was involved with a Japanese submarine officer. There's got to be a tie-in somewhere. Well, I ought to be finding out soon.
How's that?
I'm going island hopping with Schuster and Elena in their boat. She thinks it was her idea.
Oh, now, see, that could be dangerous.
It could also put me close to an answer.
All the same, you've got to be careful.
Yeah, I...
What's the matter?
Well, looks like you can quit worrying. Look out there near the end of the wharf.
Well, I don't see anything.
That's the point. They've gone.
Schuster's boat?
Yeah. When Elena told him I was going, he must have decided it was time to clear out. They can't have been gone long. Can you arrange a boat from the Port Authority?
Of course.
Come on. Once outside the breakwater, we spot Schuster's boat on the horizon. It's dark by now. We tail into the vicinity of a small island, then lose him. We circle the island.
This island is one that your government was planning a base on, Steve. They should have been working here by now, but the sabotage has slowed things up.
Wonder what Schuster will... Hey, hold it. See that little flare of light near the top of the island?
Where?
It's gone now.
Well, let's go ashore and have a look.
We move in closer. Cut the engine, drift ashore. We work our way through the underbrush towards the place where I spotted the light. It's a big rocky hill rising up in the center of the island. We start climbing halfway up. On a ledge that's hidden until you get right to it, we find what we're looking for.
Hey, Steve, it's the mouth of a cave.
Yeah. Look, busted kerosene lantern. That's what caused that flare of light. Here's the sand they threw on it to put it out.
Right at the deck, Miss Mitchell.
Hello, Rudy.
Keep your hands inside, both of you. It's my man, Hans, here, who clumsily knocked over the lantern. As you see, we both have guns, and he is eager to make up for his stupidity.
Don't tell me you didn't bring Elena along.
I left her in port. The silly girl knows nothing of this.
So you're the one behind the sabotage, Schuster.
Slowing us down because you wanted time to find something that was on this island, right?
Right.
Something maybe in this cave? Did you find out about it from the Japanese officer whose murder you got away with in Saigon?
You don't miss a trick, Mitchell. Yes, I'd known about it for some time, but Nakata was the only one who knew its location. Took me quite a while to catch up with him, then to work my way here gradually so as not to arouse suspicion.
What is it?
Gold and silver, Mitchell. Taken from Java by a Japanese submarine in the early part of the war. Hidden here in this cave. $500,000 worth.
Nice haul.
And the two of you will help Hans and myself carry it down to the boat.
Then what?
Well, let us say that you will become so attached to this cave you will never leave. Hans, guard them while I locate the gold inside the cave.
Yeah.
Just a minute, Schuster.
What is it?
You seem to have figured out most of the angles. Could be there's one you've overlooked.
What is that?
You haven't been inside the cave yet. That Japanese officer you killed might still have the last laugh on you. Maybe he booby-trapped the gold.
Booby-trapped? Don't listen to him, Hans. He's just stalling.
Am I? Booby-traps have been rigged before.
Very well, Mitchell. I tell you what. I will give you the honor of going into the cave first. You can then find out for yourself.
Okay, sister. I'll go first.
Wait!
He realizes his mistake too late. I dive into the cave and to one side. Shots go wild. He pounds in after me. I move fast in the dark, start a wide circle to get back to the entrance. I can hear him stumbling along behind me. I keep circling. I'm almost back to the entrance now. Then I realize I'm silhouetted in the moonlight.
Mitchell! Stay where you are!
I'm cooked. He takes a couple of side steps for a better shot. Then the explosion sends me sprawling out of the cave.
Steve, you okay?
Yeah. Hey, what about Hans?
He took his eyes off me at the explosion. I clipped him. What happened inside?
Chester must have tripped the wire that set off the booby trap. Oh, brother. And me charging around there in the dark.
Yes. Well, I'm sure the gold wasn't damaged much. We'll contact the authorities in Java about it. But just one little question, old boy. How do you know about the booby trap?
Just one little answer, old boy. I didn't.
You what? Well, remind me never to play poker with you. Well, I expect you'll want to be getting back to port. Schuster said that Elena was still there.
Elena? Are you kidding? I just barely escaped from one booby trap. I'm going to quit while I'm still ahead. Next week, Trieste and the friendly game of checkers. I get jumped.
And that will be Steve Mitchell's dangerous assignment next week. Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell with Herb Butterfield as the commissioner, is written by Bob Reif and Adrian John Doe and is directed by Bill Karn. Be with us again next week at this time when Brian Donlevy, starring in the role of Steve Mitchell, will embark on another transcribed Dangerous Assignment. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Dangerous Assignment on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC broadcast from April 29, 1953. The very same year the star Brian Dunleavy was appearing in The Woman They Almost Lynched, alongside Audrey Totter, Joan Leslie, and John Lund. That wraps this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levenier. Thanks for tuning in.